Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another very exciting episode of the Friends Talking Fantasy Podcast. My name is Charles, and with me today, as always, is my lifelong friend and co-host, Dylan.
I'm ready to talk some fantasy with my friend Charles.
I am ready to talk some fantasy with my friend as well, Dylan, but not just any fantasy today. You know, Dylan, yes, there's so much I love about the name of our show, the Friends Talking Fantasy Podcast, but it has a couple drawbacks. One being the URL could be read as Friend Stalking Fantasy, which is not ideal, so that's a bit of a bummer. And the other is, when you say Friends Talking Fantasy, you're competing in SEO, not just with our fantasy literature friends, but with our fantasy sports friends as well. Isn't that right, Dylan?
That's exactly right. So, Charles, you and I decided, how do we break into this market? How do we take all those people searching for their fantasy sports podcast and then reel them in to our fantasy novel talking podcast? And Charles, I think we finally cracked the code after several years of this. Jeez, we started this in 2020. It's 2024.
I know, dude. It's one of those things where, let's also be real here. Like, at the time when we were looking at names and doing Google searches, talking fantasy was just overrun with fantasy sports, and it's taken us way too long to try and ride that fantasy sports gravy train. And so that's what we're here to do today. It's twofold. One, cash in on that fantasy sports bracket goodness, and two, figure out what was the best book that we read last year. That's the goal of our Sweet 16 fantasy book bracket. We've got our top 16 books that we've read in the past year. We kind of stretched it a little bit. It's more like 13 months. We went into February through March 1st. February of last year to March 1st to this year. We got 16 books, and we are here in part one to go through the first 8 books on this bracket and get us down to a top 4. That's the goal. That's why we're here today.
Yep, that's exactly why we're here. And everyone knows that March is synonymous with the college basketball March Madness NCAA tournament. And I'm a big college basketball fan myself, I have to say. Florida Atlantic University, used to work there. I'm going to be pulling hard for them. Colorado State, they're going to make the tournament. So it's a great year for that. But it's an even better year for talking about our fantasy book. So we're skipping. We didn't go all the way to 64, or actually, was it 66 with the play-in game? We didn't go all the way back to 64 fantasy books. That would be overwhelming for all of us. But we do have a Sweet 16 going here. We didn't really do seeding, all right? That's a little much for us, a little intensive. And if we're seeding, we're basically already ranking the books. And then it's like, what's the point of recording an episode? But I will say, Charles, we've got a really exciting Sweet 16.
We sure do. And for those of you that aren't sports fans, like myself included, who's never watched a game of college basketball in his life, think of it like the World Martial Arts Tournament in Dragon Ball Z. That's kind of what we're doing today. We've got a bracket going, single elimination, random matchups, you know, only one will prevail. So that's why we're here today. You know, personally, I always bet on Goku, always excited to see him enter the tournament, but not always a sure thing, you know. So, Dylan, let's go through.
Akira Toriyama
died on March 1st, actually, was when he passed away, the creator of Dragon Ball. So this is also, we're doing two things right now.
It's dedicated to him.
It's dedicated to him. We're celebrating March Madness, Sweet 16, college basketball, and we're also honoring Akira Toriyama at the same time. This is quite an onerous moment here. Should we just go through all 16 titles really quick before we do our first 8?
Right.
Like, do you want to announce the first date and I'll do the second?
Let's talk about the matchups.
Yeah.
So, we, as a unit, also tried to organize this by kind of similar subgenre type things for the books. Mm-hmm. Like, the first round matchups have something in common with each other. That's the route mm-hmm. we went instead of the... We wanted to go regions, like, you know? But then it was like... I don't know. It doesn't all fit. But we do have matchups.
Similar pairings, yeah.
Similar pairings. And the first matchup, this is two Titans. Two teams this that would never be facing each other in a seeded system. Because these would probably both be number one seeds. Maybe number one, number two type seeds. But we have Rhythm of War by Brandon Sanderson. That is the... fourth and most recent installment of his Stormlight archive. Yeah. And you're thinking, how could that possibly
even that's got to be like a one seed, two seed pick, right?
So it should be going up against going up against Tops, a four seed in the Sweet 16. But that's not how it's working here. It is going to be going up against the Farseer trilogy by Robin Hopp, which could easily have been a number one seed elsewhere.
This could have easily been the finals.
this could easily have been the finals. But I went the route of these are two things I would call epic fantasy. And mm-hmm. I wanted a matchup between the epic fantasy books because they really fit together better than when you look at the rest of this bracket, better than anything else. So that was our plan. We're sticking to it. This is going to be a tough one to work through, but we're starting off with a bang. Next up.
Speaking of bang, Powder Mage.
Speaking of bang, we're talking about the Flintlock fantasy books that we read earlier this year, I believe, which are the Powder Mage trilogy by Brian McClellan and apprentice to Brent Sanderson. So we could get a matchup in the next round between those two.
Apprentice?
That would be pretty wacky to see. But those are the narratives we expect in March Madness. Power Mage Trilogy is that Flintlock fantasy. And it's kind of walking the line between a little bit of the darker side compared to something like Rhythm of War. It is a big military fantasy series, and we really enjoyed it. We read all of that. We also have another book that does have gun-level technology and also kind of walks the line between that. Not quite grimdark, but not quite in the more hopeful, epic Rhythm of War type category. And that is The Greenbone Saga by Fonda Lee. And yeah, that's urban fantasy. And it's kind of an adaptation of, well, not an adaptation, but inspired by The Godfather, kind of mob story stuff. And it's in an Asian inspired setting. That's exciting. Charles, do you want me to keep going, or you want to?
Yeah, I mean, we can get through these other ones pretty quickly here. We've got the book That Wouldn't Burn by Mark Lawrence. That was one of the biggest releases of last year of the Burning Library series, one of his most ambitious titles to date. So obviously, big name there. And then we're going up against Spiffbo finalist Indie Darling, Legacy of the Brightwash by Crystal Matar, which is just taken over our social media fandom by storm. You know, this was the most recent book that we've read to be eligible for this bracket as well. So coming in hot off the press there. And you've got two kind of like, you know, Dylan, what was the settings?
Genre
kind of
bending,
similar vibes,
sort of,
genre like bending, not exactly medieval, a little later kind of vibes into the settings as well. So really excited to get into those. And then we've got some big hitters down here at the bottom. We have A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. I mean, this is probably, besides, you know, Farseer trilogy and Rhythm of War, I mean, this is a blockbuster book, you know, big romantic.
It's bigger than both of those in terms of overall.
It's got to be.
At least ratings and stuff on Goodreads, let's say.
Just huge. So that is a big one. Going up against a, you know, a highly lauded, celebrated, I would call it almost like cozy romantic book, House in the Cerulean Sea, by T.J. Klune. This is a, like, one that you see, like, lauded all the time, and it was, like, a Barnes & Noble big seller as well. And, you know, T.J. Klune, it's also a very romantic story, so that's why the two are put against each other. And those make up the first half of our bracket. And these are the books. We've got eight. We need to get down to a final two. So we have another set of eight that we'll get into in the next episode. You guys can wait and see what exciting literature is coming up from there, because we are already nearly 15 minutes into this episode and we got to get going on the matchups. Anything else to say, Dylan, before we get into our first match?
No, I think we're ready to roll here, and let's start off with that Rhythm of War versus Farseer trilogy discussion. So, Charles, where do we even start? I mean, let's talk a little Rhythm of War here, Charles, because I think you and I both really enjoyed that book. It is epic in every sense of the word. It is a continuation of Stormlight Archive series that we love. But I will say, Charles, not the strongest installment of the series, in my opinion. So if we're going to start nitpicking some things, I feel like this was a slower book than I'd say probably pretty much all of the previous installments in the Stormlight Archive. It did have a lot of sort of meeting around and talking and bureaucracy, and I felt like a little less action than we're used to. Character development was good, got some focus, and of course some of the battles and epic moments that we expect out of Sanderson. But to me, it's not coming in as strong as, let's say, if we're going the Way of Kings, or if we're going with, God, I'm blanking on book two right now, but the two books that probably feel the strongest would be those. Oathbringer's pretty strong too, but
Words of Radiance, you mean?
Words of Radiance, yes.
Edge
Words
Dancer, of Radiance, Oathbringer,
sure.
Dawnshard.
These are to me, Rhythm of War was the weakest installment of the four first books. I don't know if that's a common opinion or what, but Charles, how did you feel?
You know, I have an interesting relationship with this series because I'd put it off for so long, and it has such a rabid fan base, and it really put Brandon Sanderson, who's already super famous for taking over Wheel of Time and writing Mistborn and the Cosmere and all of that, and brought him to the next level. And now here he is dropping like multi-million dollar Kickstarters just every year, breaking records and being able to strong arm Audible of all things into negotiating better rates for the whole industry. And it kind of all starts from his just absolute fan, like, mastery that he commands. And this is his magnum opus, Dylan, is the series that he has planned. This is his most ambitious project. This is him with no limitations, just writing whatever he wants and as much as he wants, writing it for him just as much as he's writing for the fans. And there's a lot that comes with that that is really great and super super exciting. And on the other hand, when you come with that, you know, as much as I love to support artistic integrity, you do start to get a little bit overblown in some places, and that could be a bug or a feature, right? Like, depending on, some people just want to read endless pages in a fantasy world, and that's their escapism. That's their one book they read a year, and they just love it. For me, it's like this book was like 1,200 pages long, maybe more. Like, it takes up one book takes up like a whole shelf in Barnes & Noble. Huge. And I think what you were alluding to is kind of where I agree. It's a lot, and it is weighted down. And I sometimes feel like, am I fully understanding what's happening? Do I need to be taking notes? Like, what is going on? And that is not like a huge deterrent. Like, I really enjoyed the series. Obviously, Sanderson's at the top of his craft writing this. But if we have to start picking at it, that's where I go. It's the weightiness of it. It is just so big and so massive and so expansive that it's hard to even like fully wrap your head around it sometimes. And when you compare that to its competition, Assassin's Apprentice, which again, it expands into like many books.
Farseer, by the way.
Going the Farseer trilogy.
Of Farseer. That's kind of how I put it together.
Yeah.
We read all of Farseer in the last year. We only read Rhythm of War of all the Stormlight in the last year. So it's a little.
And honestly, by page count, they're probably pretty close. Like, yeah, 1,200 pages.
It's kind of surprisingly big, those last couple books.
Yeah, that's like, true. The last one is 700 pages long. So it does get a little into the chunky territory, but. 1,200 is a lot. So, I mean, you have two legends, right? So you got to kind of remove, I feel like that cancels out, right? The legendary status. For me, like, I'll be honest with you, I loved Way of Kings, but the Stormlight Archive as a whole and Rhythm of War, which is where we're focusing, not my favorite Sanderson work, if I'm being totally honest here, whereas Robin Hobb's Farseer trilogy is like incredible. It's like the benefit of having the full trilogy is that it really is like a masterpiece and just a different kind of fantasy writing, where instead of being like super expansive multi-world 1,000 POVs, we are in the mind intimately of Fitz Chivalry. So that is a huge thing to consider as well.
Yeah, that is a huge thing to consider. To me, it is a different story going with Rhythm of War than if we were going in with, let's say, Mistborn. I mean, to me, Mistborn is my favorite work of any of Sanderson's. And I'll say Farseer has extremely strong character work, stronger than Rhythm of War, in my opinion, and one of the strongest books or one of the strongest series out there when it comes to that. You said we're super tied to Fitzchivalry. It's his point of view. This is a story of what it's like being a bastard in this royal setting where he is just constantly being just beat down and rendered powerless and all this stuff. That is interesting from the character development standpoint. The nitpicking that we should do, to be fair, is it is slow at times, and people do find this series to be even to the extent that's boring. For me, this is a reread of the first book and then a continuation of the series beyond that for the first time. For me, the first time I read it, I was feeling a little bored. It was years and years ago. I've since come around on this series, but there are some aspects you can pick at if you want to choose Rhythm of War over it. So, Charles, I feel like I know where you're leaning, but and I don't think I'm going to fight you on it. So,
for me, it comes down to just the poetry of the writing of the Farseer trilogy. Like, Sanderson writes great action and great, you know, he sets up great scenes and has great writing, action, plot structure, all that stuff, reveals, twists, all that, really exciting. But the writing and the intimacy of the character development of Farseer is what inches it away for me. And it sounds like you're not going to fight me on that, Dylan. Does that mean you disagree, but you're letting it slide, or what? You got to pick a stance, too. If I'm going up against the Sander fans, like, I need some support here.
I won't leave you hanging on your own here, Charles. I think I like Stormlight more than you do, but and I probably am not quite as strong on the Farseer trilogy as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that being said, I still think if we're just doing Rhythm of War, if we're doing the whole Stormlight archive, I don't know. If we're doing Mistborn, I'd probably be fighting for Mistborn, but we're not doing any of that. We're doing Farseer trilogy as a whole against Rhythm of War. And I don't mean like, oh, I'm weighing all of the books combined and the enjoyment. No, I just mean I think the Farseer trilogy is stronger for me as a reader than is Rhythm of War. And that poetic writing, I'm on the same page about Charles, and it is, I think, going to be borderline an upset anytime Sanderson goes out in the first.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, Purdue. It's like Purdue, number one seed, going out in the first round of last year's NCAA tournament. But, I mean, not to, this is not Fairleigh Dickinson we're talking about. This is the Farseer trilogy, and I think we're going to have to send them to the next round, the Elite Eight.
Wow, that is exciting. So the Elite Eight for sure. And this is almost like when Jackie Chun stepped down from a match in his second World Martial Arts tournament after he had won previously. So that's kind of a big deal there as well. They're very similar. So Farseer advances. We might upset some people there, but I don't think anyone like Sanderson versus Robin Hobb, you got to throw respect either way. So I'm not anticipating too much craziness, especially when we kind of rigged it with a series versus the fourth book in a series, you know. So I think we can get away with putting Sanderson aside on this one. And hasn't he won enough already? The man just broke another Kickstarter record a few days ago, so he'll be fine. Let's jump into the next bracket here, the next matchup. We've got The Powder Mage Trilogy by Brian McClellan and The Greenbone Saga by Fonda Lee. This is an interesting matchup because you have two, what I would call, although it's been many years now, they're both pretty well established right now. In the context of fantasy literature history, I'd call them up-and-comers. But I'd say, you know, they're getting even more and more famous. You know, Fonda Lee had a fantastic couple of years. You know, her short stories in this universe have done really well also. So just a couple real rising stars in the industry here, and two full series as well. So no shortcuts can, you know, we couldn't manipulate it that way. There, we just have to kind of compare the two. I feel like in today's day and age, like finger on the pulse of social media, just because it's more recent, Greenbone Saga certainly has a lot of popularity online, but Powder Mage gets recommended a lot pretty regularly. So this is going to be a tough one, Dylan.
It is going to be a tough one. I think, yeah, let's talk pros and cons again here.
Okay.
Powder Mage, to me, had really strong military fantasy and strategy. It is an exciting book. It is full of these big moments. We've got gods walking the earth. We've got kind of a hard magic system facing up against a soft magic system. It'll give you your share of explosions and all of that. Where is it not as strong? To me, if we're comparing it to the Greenbone Saga, probably less attention paid toward like character development. I would say the plot is probably the number one thing being serviced here. I think that it is, I don't know, there's something there that feels like, I don't know, the female characters for me were a big downside in Powder Mage Trilogy in terms of there weren't a lot of them. Those, like, there's one point of view character who is a woman, and it was not the strongest character, not a lot of side characters. Like, to me, that is a downside of this series, and like other characters, right? Like what was her name with a V?
In Powder Mage,
it was Taniel's love interest, really, but more his ex fiance or whatever. Either way, she was like a missed opportunity. Vlora, thank you. She was a missed opportunity, and to me, that was one of the weaker aspects of it. We can get into Greenbone's pros and cons as well.
Yeah, I mean, for me, what I really liked about Powder Mage was it took everything that I like about the fantasy genre, especially coming from the Brandon Sanderson, Joe Abercrombie, George R. R. Martin world. And it's just like another hit of that right into the veins. Like, okay, great. We got great military fantasy, battle action, custom magic system that feeds right into the action. Like, the entertainment value is 100% there for me. And it fits into like this comfortable genre for me where it's like I could consume stories like this all day long. So to me, that is its greatest strength. But like you said, also, it's a bit older. Its character development isn't as strong. So if we're nitpicking it, those are kind of the cons. And then also you're going up against so many strengths of the Greenbone Saga, which is like people, you know, like us included, love these characters. And it has its own action-packed custom magic system with the use of jade to augment abilities. And it's like there's martial arts, there's like gunfire, there's mob stories tied in. Like, it does a lot of the same things that Powder Mage it does in terms of its strengths around magic systems and action. So it's a tough matchup.
Yeah, I totally agree, Charles. I think that both books have pretty impressive world building as well. Mm-hmm. And I'll say Powder Mage, I don't want to give it an unfair treatment in terms of, I don't think it has bad character development or even mediocre. No. I would say it has character development that's like still good. But I think that Greenbone gives the characters more opportunity to breathe. And at the same time, there were a lot of times when we were reading Greenbone where I felt like you and I were like, ooh, like, I really want this final showdown between these two characters. And when they face, like, who knows what could happen. And it seems like Fonda intentionally was like, I'm not really going to give you that per se. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to push this magic system to its absolute limit to give you the most intense moments possible and fight scenes. Like, that does end up taking a back seat if she thinks she can develop the characters in a way that she'd rather do. So I think that, to me, that was a little bit of a bug rather than a feature of the Greenbone Saga, but I could see it being a feature. I just think it was like, come on, Fonda, give us this character versus this character at full strength, just like they would do in that Dragon Ball Z martial arts tournament, Charles. But we don't really get that. And then in Powder Mage, you get the sense that Brian McClellan took a lot of the lessons that would make sense to take from Sanderson in terms of like, hey, the readers want this moment. I'm going to give it to them. And it feels a little bit more like that.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree. There were definitely some moments that I was hoping for in Greenbone that I didn't get. And if I was being super nitpicky, it's like sometimes like when we're getting a lot of backstory on characters, and we know Fonda Lee's publicly said like, hey, I'm a fan of giving readers full backstories, like telling about these characters. And it's just a personal style thing for me where it's like, I want to see more of it through the action. Right. And I just like this magic system so beautifully lends itself to that. And I didn't get as much of a hit to the veins as I wanted. And that was purposefully done by Fonda Lee. Like it's a very nitpicky criticism, but we got to pick between these two. Like, I feel like for me, it's really coming down to personal taste, but I could go either way. I'm just so on the edge here. I could be talked into either direction. Are you feeling strongly on a choice here?
I'm not feeling strongly, but I feel like we're going to slightly lean in opposite directions, and then we're going to have to sort it out. That's the sense I'm getting. I think I slightly am leaning towards Greenbone Saga right now, but I could definitely be convinced of Powder Mage, and I'm getting the sense, Charles, you're slightly leaning towards Powder Mage.
I'm slowly leaning towards Powder Mage purely for the reason that it's more in the genre of fantasy that I typically gravitate towards. That's the only reason. And it's gotten to that level for me to try and make a choice, which is why I'm also going to say you could very easily talk me into Greenbone. If you had a passionate defense, I would happily submit my choice. But it sounds like we're both in the same area of, well, we would go our way, but could go the other way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. How do we determine this then, Charles? I think this was our greatest fear coming into this was we just...
I told you we needed a trial by combat situation. tiebreaker.
It's hard to do trial by combat over a Zoom call. So,
Here's what I'll say. I think we can speculate. It's not totally fair to the authors, but I think we can speculate that Greenbone would be a bit more... Should we go by like something like Goodreads ratings or something? I don't know if that's fair, but I feel like perception... If I thought about what our audience would pick... Again, we've cultivated an audience that would probably be in the genre of Powder Mage, but I feel like the internet as a whole would go to Greenbone just because... Fonda Lee's been having a couple big releases recently. God, it's tough, man. It's tough.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at. Yeah,
I'm willing. Trish. I'm willing to concede to Greenbone. I mean, I'm just trying to find a way to move on. And honestly, like, they're both so evenly matched.
Yeah.
That. I mean, this is too tough and. You got to go with, like, you know, I really enjoyed both. So I if you were leaning towards Greenbone, I feel like I got to have a little bit of Farseer in the last one to push it through. So I'm willing to let you kind of push through Greenbone on this one. And so we both kind of get our picks bumped forwards. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I mean, here, Charles, I would pick Farseer too, right? Over Rhythm of War. But I'm going to say Greenbone here. Was it maybe that I'd already read the Powder Mage trilogy and the Greenbone was a little fresher for me while you had not yet read Powder Mage? That might be playing a role. But I'm gonna take that concession for the sake of us moving
forward. Well, I appreciate you championing that. Again, like... That was a really tough one. And these were two big matches in the very beginning, right? A really strong showings here. So, I mean, it's one of those things that's just, you gotta pick one ultimately. So we'll bump Greenbone through. So that is an exciting matchup coming, Farseer versus Greenbone. But before we get there, we have a couple more matches to go. We have The Book That Wouldn't Burn by Mark Lawrence versus Legacy of the Brightwash by Crystal Matar. You know, I'm also getting a little bit of, like, Master Apprentice here, even though it's not really. It's like Crystal entered a competition that Mark Lawrence governs, you know? So it's, like, slightly different. But, you know, it's still kind of, they're related. I think
Mark would be like, yeah, I have very little to do with
anything. We've never spoken.
Well, I mean... Mark always likes to champion the Spiffbo books, the self-published fantasy blog off that, like you said, Mark started. I've been a judge in that before, and I kind of know Mark's opinions that he's very humble, and the way that he goes with it is always kind of, like, I don't really do much of the work. Like, I do mostly, like, tabulating
the promoting of it and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's
and he'll read the finalist.
He will, he'll read the winner at the very least.
The winner, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so I see where you're going. There's definitely a relationship here in terms of the Mark Lawrence Spiffbo connection. I was thinking, it's kind of genre blending. Like, these are both books that, how do you exactly place what The Book That Wouldn't Burn is? Obviously, it's fantasy, but there's so many elements, as there often are with Lawrence's work, that, like, bring in some sci-fi, bring in some sort of, in this case, he's bringing in a little bit more of that, like, I like to say phantasmagorical feeling to it. I mean, it's a different kind of book than we're used to seeing from Mark. Anyway, I think this was a very strong book. I was very enraptured by its themes, by its characters. It was more kind of expansive than some of Lawrence's work. Like, I think mm-hmm. that just the fact of having these two different point of view characters is kind of something that he hasn't really done before. Like, yeah. two point of view characters, at least mm-hmm. in anything I've read, that are kind of close to co-stars, equally weighed.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got some really exciting twists and turns.
He does.
It's going to be
some of the most exciting
for...
in his works, you know? He's got some good ones.
It's hard for me to... it's going to be tough to overcome what would be a high-seeded book that wouldn't burn by friend of the show, Mark Lawrence.
For sure.
And then we do have Legacy of the Brightwash, which had so many strong points as well. The steamy romance that makes Charles blush was always enjoyable. And it's got, I like that slow burn romance, how it's done that book. It's got really good intimate character work and intense focus on that. And it's also just really, you always talk about her writing chops, Crystal Matar's writing chops.
Oh,
and
so
I think
good.
That's really well said. So tough matchup. I do kind of know where I'm leaning, but Charles, give me some.
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is the other thing that I want to make sure we consider. This, you know, how many books has Mark Lawrence published before The Book That Wouldn't Burn? So many. Like, he's had several trilogies out at this point. Like, the guy's well established in his career from like the early 2000s and beyond. This is Crystal Matar's first book, and it is self-published. I mean, that is such a strong...
The amount of work she had to do to make
this happen.
That
is such a strong, pro to consider here. I think this is the only... Is this the only self-published book we have on the list right now? I believe so. I mean, she's going up against, like, I mean, we've got Robin Hobb, we've got Fonda Lee, we've got Mark Lawrence, and we have even, like, Dune on the other side of this bracket. So, like, the fact that we made it here into the Sweet 16 and the fact that, you know, it is not to be understated. And it is also the most recent book that we read. And to me, there's a lot of strengths here and lots of great character work and, you know, genre bending, as you said, too. It's not what you would expect in like a traditional, you know, some people say, oh, it's like... It's a gas lamp fantasy, or it's romance, or it's grimdark. It's a bit of all, but it's its own unique thing. So much like Book That Wouldn't Burn, but yeah, I mean, I don't know, dude. It's so tough because Mark Lawrence is like his most ambitious work to date, and that's something that we've seen recently as authors just like going all out and. For him especially, it's really exciting to see because he's always been like, I'm going to write this book. It's about this character. This is what makes them interesting. I'm going to, like, the trilogy's out and we'll move on. And then in this one, he's like, well, this is this crazy world within worlds. And then you go through portals and then there's science elements and then there's fantasy elements and then there's twists and reveals and two co-star characters and we're switching POVs and timelines and... all these other things, and it's super exciting. And it was, you know, when it came out last year, it was a nominee for Best Fantasy in the Goodreads Choice Awards. It was definitely one of the go-to top fantasy books of last year for good reason. So it's hard to compete. You know, we both came up talking to each other about fantasy starting with Mark Lawrence too. So it's so hard to like separate that from this decision as well. We've been super huge fans of Mark Lawrence's work for like, golly, coming up on, dare I say, 20 years. So like, that's something to consider as well. Dylan, I think you know where I'm leaning as well. Kind of a unfair matchup for poor Crystal, but she fought a very valiant fight, in my opinion. I gotta tip it to a book that wouldn't burn. It was just such a, dare I say, hot release last year that it's just like you gotta give it the nod, even though I think Legacy of the Brightwash was excellent. That's just where I'm leaning.
I'm with you there, Charles. And to me, I think the something that we pointed toward with Legacy of the Brightwash, to me, is a big thing that's tipping in Book That Wouldn't Burn's favor, is it feels very much like a start of a trilogy in the way that it doesn't have that standalone with sequel potential feel, because there's so much left still to do, and we're excited to get there. We know that the sequel is already out, but I guess it didn't finish with as much of a bang, that first book, as did
so
Book
True.
That Wouldn't Burn. Book That Wouldn't Burn gave us like an amount of twists and turns and reveals and all that kind of stuff.
Like a perspective shifting kind of ending where you're like, whoa, I'm thinking differently now, you know?
Yeah. So to me, look, they're both excellent. All of these books are excellent. That's why
they're the top 16, man. We read a lot of books last year.
So I'm going to say let's go Book That Wouldn't Burn. That seems to be the consensus here. And
let's move on. Would you like to introduce the next bracket, Dylan, as we usher Book That Wouldn't Burn to the next level? Yeah.
Yeah. So they'll go. The Book That Wouldn't Burn will go up against either A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. I mean, you all know it. It's massively popular romantasy. For us, this is, and I maybe should have mentioned this to you earlier, Charles, because we did read both book one and book two of this, which would include A Court of Mist and Fury. That's what we're considering, both of those books.
Okay.
It is going up against Cerulean Sea by T.J. Clune. And you explained that one well, Charles, already. So let's talk about A Court of Thorns and Roses, this massively popular romantasy book.
I feel like your parents sitting down a child telling them that you're about to get divorced. Let's talk about this, guys. Have a seat.
Well, okay. We diverged from the fan base of this series substantially, in the sense that we loved the first book and we were really impressed by the pacing, by the way Sarah J. Maas just gets it moving, by this new world we're being thrown into. And then the second book for us was not as strong, especially you, Charles. You came in and were not satisfied with a lot of aspects of The Court of Mist and Fury. And that is different from the fan base that largely considers book two to be the strongest in this series. So to me, I think that the first book is being dragged down a bit in our estimations, our own subjective tastes, by the second book. I think the second book, people latch onto the romance, and I think it is probably stronger romance and slow burn, blah, blah, for the second book than the first book. In the first book, there's some problematic elements to the romance, although I would say there are in book two as well that get overlooked a little bit more by the fan base. But anyway, to me, this is a time where we talked about how Farseer gained some advantage by being the full series compared to Rhythm of War. To me, the fact that this is two books is a little bit of a disadvantage from our estimations than it would be if it was just book one.
That's fair, Dylan. And, you know, House on the Cerulean Sea, I think what it has going for it is, you know, T.J. Clune is an incredible writer, and I'm just super interested in what he's doing. Like, his trajectory is so fascinating, like coming out of the gate so strong with, you know, he had written a romance book in 2013, and then he wrote House in the Cerulean Sea in 2020. And since then, he's been like, you know, he's got all these other books and publications planned, entered the New York Times bestsellers list with House in the Cerulean Sea. He's winning all kinds of awards, and you can see why. I mean, his writing is, like, compared to A Court of Thorns and Roses, which is very obviously entertaining and steamy, T.J. Klune's is, like, literary, you know? It's as much as it is, like, a cozy story about a guy who has a mundane job who gets, you know, invested in the well-being of orphan children and their headmaster, and then you're pulled into that, and there's, like, cute, magical elements to it. It's a very adorable story. It's very romantic in different ways. You're not getting, like, these steamy, will they, won't they, you know, high detail sexual encounters, but you are getting a lot of really strong romance.
Which makes
you blush,
and that's the downside for A Court of Thorns and Roses.
Right, right. So, I mean, it's hard to compare. It's like comparing a Hollywood blockbuster to just a really beautiful art house film, you know, although it also was a blockbuster too. So it's like you're choosing between the two, and it's like one might win Academy Awards, one might not, but also break box office records at the same time. And you got to choose between those two. And I feel like that's where we are right now.
Yeah. I mean, to me, if this was book one of A Court of Thorns and Roses against Cerulean Sea, I'd probably be pushing for ACOTAR, as the kids call it, book one. But I don't know, that book two, and I know how you felt about it, Charles, it left us a little bit with a bad taste in our mouth. And
yeah, I mean, let's be real here. We're not in the target market, right? Like, so right away, it's like, okay, well, we enjoyed the story and she's a good writer. The other issue I had is, like, you know, you call the ending of the first book from a mile away, like,
that's,
you know,
fair.
And it's just like, okay, like, there's riddles and it's like, boom, I solved the riddle before you even finished explaining the riddle, you know, like,
is
this could have been over.
About House in the Cerulean Sea's ending that really was a huge twister reveal for you, Charles? I
know, but it doesn't set it up. It's not like, here's a riddle, what could the answer be, and then it's like, ooh, I don't know, it's tough, and then he, like, goes on for another, like, 100 pages or 50 pages or whatever it is, and then you're like, oh wow, that's the answer. No, it never did that. It's a totally different genre to me. It's like they set it up in such a way where it's like, well, like, I didn't know how the book was going to end. Like, you know, it's going to have a happy ending, but it could end a bunch of ways, you know? So the fact that it ended the way it did was, you know, cute and exciting. And I think that's the difference, you know? They're both super successful bestsellers. To me, I'm just more interested in what T.J. Klune is doing as an author, and the kind of stories he's doing are different, and it's just more kind of the romanticy that I enjoy compared to, like, the steamier, more explicit side. So I'm voting for Cerulean Sea. It sounds like you are as well.
Yes, I will agree with you there, Charles. I don't think there's a lot more to say on this. I think we're on the same page, and why not just put Cerulean Sea forward?
Why not? Why not? So that finishes the first round. So that's kind of a big deal. Now we are down to our top four, and we need to get through this to get to our top two, and then that will conclude the episode, and we need to get the top two, the semifinals, going for the other side. And our final episode will be the semifinals and the finals. So yeah. Should we just jump right into our first matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad the pros and cons have been laid out for both of these two series, Farseer Trilogy versus Greenbone Saga. I'm going to say, Charles, the Greenbone Saga has its work cut out for me in regard to beating the Farseer Trilogy out. I think that they both have strengths in very similar areas in terms of priority of the character building, the intimacy we get with the character spanning a decent amount of time, although even longer with the Greenbone Saga. But I think that for me, it's just I lean personally a little bit more toward the Farseer with how it's executed. The reason I would say that Greenbone has a fighting chance here is that Greenbone has a lot more action than the Farseer trilogy. That
yeah,
there's a lot of entertainment mm-hmm. value coming from Greenbone that perhaps is not quite there with Farseer, but Farseer yeah. is like a case study in Fitch chivalry in a way that you just don't get otherwise. Right. So I'm going to put out there, I'm leaning Farseer right now. So go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, the other, like, I want to be fair to Greenbone here and give some, like, Farseer is also depressing. Like, it's just a story about a guy who gets beaten down and beaten down and beaten down and beaten down. And a lot of people I've talked to who are big fantasy readers and have read everything have DNF'd Farseer trilogy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can respect why, but on the other hand, this is one of my favorite series in fantasy of all time. I just think it's so incredibly well written and so beautiful and moving and such a rare introspective into a character. Like you said, it's a case study on a character, and I just get moved by it. And the ending is so impactful, and you just feel so kind of emotionally raw by the end of this story that it's one of the all-time Mount Rushmore greats, right? So even when you have this hot new release of the Greenbone Saga, it's gotta go up against the classic Titan, you know, like that is hard. And as much as Greenbone had so much going for it, it has the action that Farseer doesn't have. It has the more exciting mobster kind of political war aspects going on, mob turf war stuff, and it has some really cool, like, villainous kind of characters. To me, Farseer is just at another level of themes and character development that is where I gravitate to, whereas Greenbone is just a really creative, exciting, also beautifully developed world. But I mean, I gotta tip it to Farseer. I'm biased here. This is one of my favorites, and we reread it for the show. I gotta say Farseer.
Yep. I would say that Robin Hobb, if we're making a kind of Mount Rushmore of fantasy writers that are publishing books in our lifetime. So, you know, we're no Tolkien, none of that. We're just saying kind of that as modern fantasy starts when Charles was born, then and the world changed forever. Then Robin Hobb's on that Mount Rushmore. So it's Fonda Lee. Does she have every chance to get her face on that? Sure.
Oh, yeah.
But she's a newer writer compared to Robin Hobb, and I think we're going to have to go with Robin Hobb's Farseer trilogy here. So let's
move first one coming into the final episode here is the Farseer trilogy. I mean, no surprise there. I mean, between Rhythm of War and Farseer, those were like the top two seeds, in my opinion. So the fact that one of them powered through to the end is not too much of a surprise, but man, the getting there was tough, dude. Like, Powder Mage and Greenbone were so hard to choose, and you know, Greenbone and Farseer, they're so kind of opposite. They like complement each other pretty well, so it was hard to pick. But I'm happy with our choice
at the
there.
End of the day, it's a character work that's central to both, and so I think we leaned Farseer because of. I think Greenbone has way more characters, and therefore none of them get as much attention as does Fitz in Farseer. We just love the way Fitz is written, even if we are yelling at him a lot of the time while reading it. But anyway,
he's not as likable or cool as any character in Greenbone either, but you know.
Yeah. All right.
Somehow we still gravitate to it.
Book That Wouldn't Burn, Against House in the Cerulean Sea. I mean, this is, to me, I kind of already know where I want to go.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
I just think, look, we love House in the Cerulean Sea. Let me sit you and your siblings down and tell you about
it's
House
It's not you, it's us, it's Charles. Not your fault.
Yeah. It's nothing to do with House in the Cerulean Sea. But no. It's a cozy, fun book. I was fully entertained reading it. When you compare it to the ambitious effort of The Book That Wouldn't Burn, I mean, I just have to give the nod to Mark Lawrence's work here. Mm. It has It has everything. It has big picture themes. It has the explosion and action that you expect from Mark Lawrence. It has romance. It has everything you could ask for. And like I said, the twists and the reveals are very strong and serve the themes really well. So I had to book that one burned for me, Charles. Do you want to fight on it, or are you gonna agree?
I love House in the Cerulean Sea as well. You know, great book. Mm-hmm. It comes down to one, just like, you know, I love House in the Cerulean Sea, but it's kind of like an barely in the fantasy genre. You know, it's more of like a literary fiction book than it is necessarily like a fantasy book like we typically read, where we're reading military fantasy, grim dark fantasy, that kind of stuff. So it's already got a bit of an outlier kind of mentality to it, and that was its greatest strength coming into this matchup. But you're going up against Mark Lawrence, someone that we've had a long history of reading and talking about together, and this was like one of the hottest new releases of last year as well. Whereas Cerulean Sea had already been pretty well established by that point. So, I mean, just our own personal bias has to come in here. And to me, it's a book that wouldn't burn. It's a obvious choice to go into the semifinals because it's that one of the biggest releases of last year. Mark Lawrence is such a tentpole author in our reading library. So you gotta give the nod.
I mean, the whole thing is our subjective bias, and mm-hmm. in this case, the book that wouldn't burn. I mean, a fantastic book. I would recommend it easily to just about any fantasy reader, and it's right up our alley by an author we love. It was always going to be tough for any of these books to keep it out of the final four, but yeah, the two books on this side of the bracket. Oh, geez, Charles. I don't know how we're going to choose between the Farseer trilogy and the book that wouldn't burn. But luckily, we don't have to do that right now.
We will defer that choice for a later day for sure. Because, yeah, that's too much for one episode. We already had to pick between Rhythm of War and Farseer. You know, that was like insane that we did that. But, you know, to me, feel like some of the top four books that we read last year. I think we did a good job narrowing it down. I see some big names on the right, like big, big names. So, I mean, we'll have to get into that next. But for now, we have the Farseer trilogy by Robin Hobb and The Book That Wouldn't Burn by Mark Lawrence making it into the semifinals on our March Madness, Sweet 16, World Martial Arts Tournament, top fantasy books of the past year. So,
that's really exciting. Easy to title.
Yeah, you know, it's got a nice ring to it.
It's not a mouthful at all. All right. So, Charles, I feel happy with the choices that we made. Was it hard to pick against? I mean, that means that we had six books that didn't make it through from this bracket, but to me, like you said, I'm looking at Farseer trilogy, I'm looking at Book That Wouldn't Burn, and yeah, those are final four level books for our tastes. And
yeah, for sure,
I feel good about where we're at.
I feel good. There were some really tough ones. Like I was not expecting Powder Mage versus Greenbone, you know, that was a really close matchup, just as close as Rhythm of War versus Farseer, but we powered through somehow. Hopefully we didn't upset too many people, but there we go. It's done.
I mean, I think we love all these books. That's why they're
here. Oh, yeah. They're the top 16.
Let's get that sweet, sweet outro music pumping, Charles, and then we can move on to the other side of this bracket.
Well said. Let's do it. Thank you, everyone, one and all, for listening to yet another very exciting episode of the Friends Talking Fantasy Podcast. If you like what you heard today, if you want to support the show, do us a favor and engage with us over on the socials. That's at the FTF Podcast on Instagram and TikTok, and then at the FTF Podcast with the number one at the end on Twitter. Twitter. Now, Dylan, if they like what they heard today and they want to support the show even more than engaging with us over on social media, what can they do?
Toss 5 stars to our podcast, which you can do over on Spotify. Just as of right now, click about, click where the stars are, throw us 5 of those, and it means a lot when you do that. You can also rate and review on Apple Podcasts. That means you can write nice things about us. You can tell us, hey, you seem like really nice people, but you got all these picks wrong, and I disagree, and blah, blah, whatever you want. Just throw 5 stars in there, and we're happy. But just listening is more than enough. Thank you so much for doing that.
Well said, Dylan. Thank you all so much. Just listening is incredible. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And as always, go forth and conquer, friends.